Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 446. In this episode, Scott talks with Damian Edwards about selecting the ultimate developer laptop.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with my good friend and favorite Australian, Damian Edwards. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just came back from a business trip, and I took my Surface Pro 3. It was my only machine. I used it for presentations, for Visual Studio, for basically everything. It's turning out to be a pretty decent and surprisingly good PC for a developer.
I'm really happy to hear that, because you and I have been on the fence on what our next laptop was going to be for a while now. I think we've been talking about this for probably ever since we got the X1, and then the new chips came out shortly after that. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about, you know, what's the next laptop we're going to get so that we would spend our own money on, because of course we get, you know, hardware from Microsoft as part of our jobs, but I wasn't particularly happy after a couple of months with the X1, despite it being a great machine. It was like, well, you know, the screen isn't that great, and you know, I can get better CPUs now, and I could do with a little bit more of this and that. And so we've been looking at different laptops for a while, and you and I have both pulled the trigger mm-hmm. on the Surface Pro 3. And I have to say, I've really enjoyed mine so far as well. I haven't done a business trip with it yet, though. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's parse a little bit there for people who aren't necessarily up to our lives. When we say X1, we're talking about the Lenovo Carbon X1 Touch.
Yes.
There's two versions, what we call V1 and V2, that you can tell them apart, because the Carbon X1 that is V2 has no physical function keys. It just has a capacitive kind of touch looking thing at the top there.
Yeah.
And what happened between the X1, which was the original X1, which is a fantastic machine, it just happened to have only a 600 by 900 screen, mm-hmm. which is just too low res. I really wanted a 1080p. They upped that to like a Super Retina 2560 by something ridiculous screen,
yeah,
which was great. But then they messed with the keyboard, moved the caps lock around, changed everything, and generally freaked people out.
I think they destroyed the touchpad too, for me. Mm-hmm. I had the original X1 Touch. I had the touchpad set up because their drivers are, you know, they're pretty good. They're pretty detailed. You can enable a lot of, you know, crazy advanced things. But I just turned pretty much everything off and tried to set it up to be as close to a Mac Pro touchpad as I possibly could, which I think a lot of people will recognize as, without much argument, the kind of the best touchpad you can get.
I think that is absolutely. I mean, if in case you didn't know,
yeah,
the Mac touchpad has just been tuned to like a fine. It is the touchpad. Other touchpads pale in comparison.
It's kind of amazing that it just seems to, I mean, I haven't used one extensively. I have a couple of people here have Macs, and occasionally I have to do something on their machine, and it just seems to naturally work, whereas mm-hmm. the ones on Windows always seem to be a bit of a struggle. But on the X1, I was able to turn off a whole bunch of stuff and sort of get it set up so that it worked pretty much like a Mac one. Mm-hmm. But on the new X1, I found that there's just too much travel mm-hmm. in the touchpad. And when I click
vertical
travel, it feels hollow. It doesn't feel substantial. Like it doesn't resist enough. And mm-hmm. then when it does sort of get beyond that threshold, it goes too far. And yeah, it may sound really trivial, but you know, you deal with these inputs every day. And if I'm going to spend, you know, up to $2,000 of my own money, I wanted something that was perfect. And mm-hmm. you and I have talked about this a lot. Like, what is the perfect developer? You know, we're kind of half developer, half, you know, what we do for Microsoft. What is that perfect device for us?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and as an aside, just so I get this out, if you are a PC person and you love the Mac touchpad, the Logitech touchpad T650 is about as close as you can get to having a portable wireless version of a Mac touchpad for a PC. It is fantastic, and I have one on my desk right now.
Cool.
Yeah, so the ultimate developer laptop slash PC, it seems so simple to me. It would have the fastest processor, it would have 16 gigs of RAM, and it would have a fast SSD.
And it would weigh 2 pounds and last 4 days.
Exactly. The battery life is for me, that was the big thing. Like, I was going to go to Haswell, and everyone was promising 10-hour battery life. The thing that I think I made the mistake with is I believed the hype about battery life.
Yeah.
When they say 10 hours of battery life, they mean one of two things. Watching a video on the dimmest brightness of the screen, and the video, it happens to be some specially formatted MPEG for that MP4 that uses the GPU to do all of its work. So don't touch your laptop and watch a 10-hour movie, and the battery will last 10 hours.
Right.
Or type in a text editor while running nothing else at the dimmest, you know, brightness. Yeah, and that's not what anyone does.
No, absolutely not. And certainly with the X1, I was finding that, you know, sitting on the couch at the end of the day watching TV while, you know, doing a bit of work, it was either a bit of coding and or some email and obviously some browsing, mm-hmm. it felt like I wasn't even getting a solid 2.5 hours out of it. Like, right. it was running down to the point. Of course, Windows doesn't even let you get down to zero. It starts yelling at you as soon as you get to 10% left. Mm-hmm. And at 7%, like, it really starts yelling at you and basically shuts itself off. Whereas the Surface Pro 3, which I've had for a few weeks now, I stayed home one day because I wasn't feeling 100%. And I sort of, well, you know, this is the perfect opportunity. Let me sit in my den at home and not plug in the Surface and just run it from 100% doing a normal sort of email, little bit of browsing, little bit of coding day. And I got a solid 5.5 hours before Windows started yelling at me. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting is that I was noting at every hour how much percent I had left, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd go down the bottom right-hand corner, I'd hover over the battery icon, and I would look at what percentages were left. And it was incredibly linear, as in it was dropping a consistent, it was like 18% per hour, on the hour every single time. So I think if Windows would let me run to zero, which I'm sure you can configure it to do that, I think I would have got, you know, exactly 6 hours out of the Surface Pro 3. And we have the i7, by the way, so people know.
What was your brightness set at, though?
I have my brightness set at the one level below the level before the power settings tell you that your screen is too bright for battery.
Okay, so when you as you hover over the power icon down there in the tray by the clock, if you get too high, it says your brightness might affect battery life.
Exactly.
You're so saying I just keep one notch below that.
One notch below that. So, like, what Windows is telling me is the optimum mix between brightness and battery life.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so I was pretty happy 5.5 hours on this type of hardware, this form factor. And, you know, we should talk a little bit more about Surface Pro 3 because people have probably seen, you know, or read about it and seen videos. But until you actually have one and use one every day, I think it's hard to appreciate just what they managed to do in this device.
Well, I went to this, this conference. It was a designer conference. And interestingly, I saw two kinds of machines at this conference. I saw MacBook Airs. I saw virtually no MacBook Pros. Everyone had either an Air or a Surface, mostly Surface 2s, Surface Pro 2s. I saw a lot of those.
Interesting.
And the people who had them were game developers. They had them
really?
Because they ran Unity on them. And they wanted to be able to ran Maya and different 3D modeling things. So it seems like while web developers favor Macs, I saw a lot of these Surface Pros with a pen and people doing design work for games.
I see. So they liked the form factor because of the pen. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, as game designers. Okay.
Well, yeah, and of course, if you look at the Penny Arcade fellow, the cartoonist stuff, he's always talking about the pen. So I think there's a class of artist that a laptop with a pen that is really a tablet is really what you want to get. Now, I like the size of the Air. It is within a few grams of the size of the Surface, but I'm realizing for what I do and traveling, being able to remove the keyboard is way more useful than I thought it would be.
Well, I will call you out a little bit. The MacBook Air is not within a few grams of the Surface Pro 3.
No?
Not by a long shot.
What are the sizes?
So the Surface Pro 3 without the keyboard is about 1.7 pounds.
Okay.
And the MacBook Air is about £3. It was kind of the original Ultrabook, yes.
Oh, my.
And so, you know, we demonstrated this when we did the launch of the Surface Pro 3 by putting, you know, both of them on a scale.
Okay.
And, it's, you know, as contrived as people may think that is, the Surface Pro 3 is a lot lighter. Now, when you add the keyboard, it does tip it up to just over £2. The keyboard is quite substantial because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on inside a proper typing keyboard, and it has one of those new precision trackpads as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, according to this site, it says, looking at a site now, it says Surface Pro with type covers 2.4 pounds, MacBook Air 2.96. So it looks like a little more than a half a pound.
A little more than half a pound, yeah. So I agree with you. I'm certainly finding that removing the keyboard when I'm sort of sitting back and going into just sort of lounge mode. Or here's a great anecdote. This weekend, I had to clean my coffee machine. The little light came on, and of course, I can never remember what the process is. There's a complicated sequence of things you have to go through to do it. So I usually grab a tablet or a laptop, and I look it up on the website, open the PDF, and then I sit there for half an hour and clean the machine. But with the Surface Pro 3, I just whip the keyboard off, bring up IE in the immersive metro, non-metro mode, and I open the PDF, and I sit there with the, you know, Surface in one hand, because it's pretty comfortable to do that, in portrait, and, you know, using the coffee machine in the other to do the cleaning. And it just works. Like, I'm finding it around the house as a tablet. I much prefer it because, you know, the screen is much bigger. Like, an extra 2 inches on the diagonal for the screen results in a much more readable sort of tablet in my mind. It feels like a magazine.
But isn't that what you use your iPad for?
Well, so I only have an original iPad. I never upgraded, and I found this weighs about the same as the original iPad, but I get a screen that's, like I said, quite a lot larger with obviously a much better quality, you know, higher pixels per inch and whatnot, and it's a lot faster. I mean, this is an i7 Ultrabook, you know, a genuine i7 Ultrabook. This thing is as fast as my X1 Carbon. It's actually faster, and it's actually as fast for doing Visual Studio compilation as my desktop I use here at work. And that might be a good segue to start talking about the differences and what it means in a developer to be a developer and using one of these devices.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one thing I do want to address, though, that is just we can't really get past it. We are two random dudes on the talking on Skype here right now who happen to work for Microsoft.
Yeah.
So someone who's made it this far, you know, this 11, 12 minutes into the podcast are going to be like, okay, I guess this is the episode of Hansel Minutes where the two Microsoft people try to sell me the Surface Pro.
Mm-hmm.
To be clear, we do work for Microsoft. To also be clear, we bought the Surface Pros with our own money.
Yep.
We did not receive any discounts. I bought mine at MicrosoftStore.com. We get laptops for work. We're allowed one new laptop every 3 years. And I have had two laptops at Microsoft. I had a T60P ThinkPad, and I have an X1 Carbon. But both you and I bought our Surface Pros after probably, what, months of deliberation and discussion.
I was looking very closely at the Asus ZenBook UX. I think it's the 31A, the ZenBook Prime.
Right, and I was looking at the Samsung.
Yes, the Series 9 Plus, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Those were both, you know, they're very good laptops. And indeed, the Asus has a very fast Ultrabook processor in it. In fact, it's the fastest rated. It was the Intel 455H U, which is a Core i7, but it has 28 watts TDP. It's rated at a thermal dispersion rating, like how much heat it has to dissipate when it's running at 28 watts. Now, that's versus the CPUs you find in the Surface Pro and the Samsung and even the X1 at 15 watts. So you're talking about a lot more heat because it's using a lot more energy and, you know, but getting you more power as a result. But it turned out the Asus didn't have a TPM, which is the Trusted Platform Module chip.
Right.
And for us, you know, connecting to VPN all the time and wanting to use BitLocker, a TPM is – I certainly would always choose a machine with a TPM over one without it if I'm doing any type of work.
If you're VPNing into work and your work has, you know, any kind of sophisticated VPN, or you use a smart card or a smart card reader, I wanted to be able and you wanted to be able to VPN in with a smart card where the smart card is virtual.
Yes, exactly. So it's inside the TPM effectively rather than me having to plug it in every time. Yeah. Which means I can't get in the building because I invariably leave it plugged into the reader and then I go outside and come back in and can't get in again.
Exactly.
So I really enjoyed that.
So the point there is that while we do work for Microsoft, we bought these ourselves. Make your own decisions. You guys who are listening to us, guys and gals, know that we tell it like it is. I don't really care if you buy a Surface or not.
Absolutely.
If you don't, that's just more Surfaces for me. So, and actually, hey, one other thing. Before we get into the developer-specific performance stuff, you know, I thought the kickstand was a gimmick. I really did. I have an iPad Air, and I always used to tell people how great the magnetic case was, because you could fold it backwards, and then it would turn into a little triangle, and that would allow you to prop the thing up. Having a kickstand on a tablet is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
I was on an airplane for like 12 hours day before yesterday, and not only was I able to take the keyboard off and use the tablet and watch movies, and I watched it for the entire time, because if you're just watching movies, the battery life is fantastic. But check this out. There was no television, no video screen on the flight from Washington, D.C. So I had a 6.5-hour flight with no TV. I took the kickstand and put it into the pocket of the seat back in front of me.
Nice.
And hung it up at the top, at the level that the screen usually is. And people thought that it was integrated into, like, people who would walk by were like, how come he has a TV?
That is hilarious.
And it's 12-inch screen. I mean,
so did you cause a ruckus on the plane?
I did cause a ruckus. People were impressed with my video collection because I had the little SD card.
Yeah.
Because I popped in the 64 gig mini SD card and brought some movies with me.
Right.
So I was living the dream while everyone else was reading the SkyMall.
And did you have your Bluetooth headphones as well?
I did, but I was told that they would rather that I use it plugged in.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because I have been on a flight recently, a couple of them, and they do make a point now, certainly in America, of saying that you're able to use, you know, electronics from gate to gate and what type of electronics. And as an interesting point, one of the great things about having a convertible is that you still can't use a laptop from gate to gate for whatever reason. I don't know what the reason is. I think it's because they're heavier.
Yeah.
They don't like them being in the aisle. And because you generally have to have the tray down to use them, a lot of people do,
right. You
still have to have the tray up for take up and landing. And so I think they say the smaller devices are okay because in an emergency, you just throw them on the floor and get out. But if you have an unwieldy laptop, it can be, you know, take you precious seconds to put it away.
Right.
And so one of the great things about the Surface Pro is you can just flip the keyboard around to the back when they're telling you to put your laptops away, use it as a tablet, and then, you know, when everyone sits down, you flip it out again and continue on your merry way.
That is actually exactly what happened. The flight attendant came by and said, sir, you need to put your laptop away. And then I kind of did it. It was a little obnoxious of me, but I just ripped the keyboard off and stuck it in. And she goes, oh, and then just moved along. So I thought that was pretty awesome. So I was able to watch movies basically wheels up to wheels down.
I actually really enjoyed that feature of it. And I have had to watch other people put their laptops away while I smugly continue to use my Surface, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it's pretty obnoxious. So performance-wise, I went and bought the Surface Dock because I wanted to really give it a go as a desktop replacement.
Mm.
How are you finding the i7 processor and the speed on this thing generally?
So to be clear, I'm one of these guys who likes to have a desktop when I'm at my desk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think a few people have seen the photo of my setup here at work where I have four monitors. I have three 24-inch widescreen monitors sort of at eye level, and then underneath the center monitor, I have a 27-inch touch monitor sort of resting on the desk but tilted up because it has one of those stands where you can tilt it up because it's touch, and then my keyboard in front of it. So I have this sort of, you know, enterprise-looking command center, which I really like having when I'm standing at my desk. And at home, I have a desktop as well. So I do not use the Surface as like my one machine to rule them all. But that said, I do a fair bit of coding on it. And obviously, I'm doing this call right now on it when we do the ASP.NET community standups, which we've just started, which is a Google Hangout. I run that completely from my Surface, including with, you know, external high resolution cameras and, you know, all that type of stuff to get that looking good. And it handles it, you know, with aplomb. This is a genuine core i7. It's the 4650U. Now, that chip was released about a year ago now. It's actually an old chip, but it is the most expensive and most high-performing version of the i7 Ultrabook chips that are at 15 watts TDP.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you the Intel HD 5000 graphics, so more of the CPU die is kind of allocated to the graphics side in terms of how much power they'll put through it. But it runs at a base clock speed of 1.7 gigahertz, but overclocks to 3.3 gigahertz when you're doing single-core type of stuff. So to give you a comparison, I have on my desktop here, it's a Core i7 Sandy Bridge. So that's the third generation or second generation, I think, of the i7 desktops. Mm-hmm. And it's the i7-2650 or something like that. So it's a pretty good i7 chip. You know, it's a genuine quad core with hyper-threading. And if I download Redis for Windows source code from GitHub, and I do a command line compile of that solution from cold, mm-hmm. my desktop and my Surface Pro 3 complete in the same amount of time.
So does that mean that the build system is not effectively using all those processors? So it's basically, it's as multi-threaded as it can be, and that's, the additional cores don't matter?
That's true. So if I then turn on multi-core build on both, the desktop does pull ahead by about 3 seconds because it has double the number of actual cores. So it goes to about a 13-second build while the tablet stays at 15 to 16 seconds. But my the Surface Pro 3, sorry, my Lenovo X1 Carbon Touch, I have the first version, that could do at best about a 20-second build. So my Surface Pro 3 is at least 25% faster when doing sort of raw compilation of a fairly complicated C++ project than my, you know, Lenovo X1 Carbon Touch.
So you keep saying TDP, it's thermal design point or thermal design power. That is the maximum amount of heat that a CPU can produce.
Yeah, it's basically the max. It's a rating for the entire system that says this is how much heat you have to dissipate from this unit, from the CPU and graphics card in this case, in order for this to operate at normal sort of, you know, ratings. After this rate, we're going to, you know, thermally throttle the CPU so that it doesn't get so hot. Because I think a lot of people don't really realize just how hot a laptop CPU gets under normal use. Mm-hmm. Sort of an Ultrabook i7 will easily get to 80 degrees centigrade very quickly when you start doing CPU intensive tasks. When I say quickly, I mean within a couple of seconds. It'll get up to 80 degrees centigrade and sort of sit there if you're pegging it at 100% CPU. Once you're getting above 90 degrees centigrade, that's when you start to get into thermal shutdown territory, or thermal throttling, I should say, mm-hmm. where the firmware on the CPU will start saying, hey, it's getting a bit hot, I need to run slower, so there's less electrons going through me and thus creating heat. Mm-hmm. Now, the X1, I found, would get very hot when I used it on my lap. It has a carbon fiber chassis. But the vent is located in one very specific location on the left-hand side. And if I'm sitting on my couch in shorts using the X1, it would be uncomfortable occasionally. I'd have to move it around because it would get quite hot and the fan would get quite loud. And the Surface Pro 3 being an i7 in a much more thermally constrained chassis because it is so ridiculously thin does have a similar result if I push it as hard. But because all the chips are up in the screen, I don't feel it on my lap.
Right. Because it's the opposite of a laptop in the sense of, you saw those jokes early on about the Surface where you take the heavy part and you make that the vertical part of the laptop. Well,
right.
Yeah. I think that, I was a little disappointed, I must say, in the first few weeks of having a Surface because I somehow imagined that it would be cool like an iPad. But as fast as a desktop. And I spent some time kind of basically being upset about that. And then realized kind of, and I'm not trying to be an apologist, but I am trying to be a realist that the laws of physics are the laws of physics.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean?
There's only so much heat you can dissipate.
Well, I mean, I have an i7 desktop with a 256 gig, you know, SSD and 8 gigs plus of RAM. And now I have the same thing that's effectively the size of my original iPad or a MacBook Air. And it'll run, you know, 2 24-inch monitors plus or 230s even.
Yeah.
And it got a little hot. And I was like, man, this sucks. You know, I mean, I'm being honest. I was pretty upset about it. And then I think it was you actually that was just like, hey, you know, physics are physics. If the CPU is under 50%, it's basically silent.
Yes.
But what I was doing was, you know, watching Netflix, downloading email, doing builds, and then running Handbrake. All at the same time, and was pissed off about it.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Handbrake definitely will peg your CPU.
Yeah,
and keep you going. But all that said, I will say that, as I just mentioned, this CPU we have in here is a year old. It came out in Q3 2013, mm-hmm. and Intel has just announced the public availability of the brand new Core M processors, mm-hmm. which is the next generation. This is the Broadwell chips. Currently, most people will, if they've bought a laptop in the last year will have Haswell, mm-hmm. which is what the Surface Pro 3 is. And they focus predominantly on reducing the amount of heat that is needed to be dispersed and improving battery life as a result. And to give an example, the first round of CPUs they released replaced the Y series of laptop CPUs. Now, you and I have the U series, which okay. is in the, they are the Ultrabook series. The Y series are a special low voltage version of those. But previously they were rated at about 12 TDP, and again the U's are rated at 15. The new Y series equivalents are rated at 4.5 watts of TDP.
Mm.
Now that is an amazing improvement, and what that means is we can now have convertibles that are somewhat like the Surface Pro without a fan. You can actually create an x86 machine that isn't an Atom, it is a core-based machine that gets, you know, similar type of performance, but without a fan.
But does that mean that I regret the purchase of my Surface Pro, thinking that a month later something better will come out?
So maybe not. I mean, that's all personal. I mean, I can tell you right off the bat, when we inevitably do a refresh of the Surface Pro 3 with the Broadwell chips, mm-hmm. I will buy one. I will buy the i7 equivalent, and I will either sell this one or I'll, you know, hand it down within the family. Because the improvements they're talking about from this new range of chips where, you know, it's we're 22 nanometers with the current generation. The new generation goes down to 14 nanometers, mm-hmm. which again just relates to less battery use. They're saying 20% improvement in battery life, and obviously a lot less heat. I'm all up in that. Like, I want the same chassis with even less heat and even more battery life and still an increase in performance. They're talking about specifically the graphics portion of the new chips being at least 50% faster than what we have here. So I'm all up for that.
Mm. So you still have your desktop. You're not going to accept this as your kind of primary laptop and savior.
Yeah, at work I still have my desktop. At home, I just realized I was cleaning out some filing over the weekend. My home desktop is 5 years old. I built it 5 years ago. And it's a Core i7-920, mm-hmm. which was the original i7. And so I'm debating right now whether I, you know, sink $500-$600 on the internals of that to upgrade it to one of the new Devil's Canyon CPUs, which were just released mm-hmm. for desktop, which would require a new motherboard and a new video card and a new CPU, or whether I just, you know what, let me just turn off the desktop and maybe I should just sink $200 on one of the Surface Pro 3 docks mm-hmm. and see if that is a better setup for me at home. I'm not really sure yet.
You know, I have the same ultimate developer PC that I built, I have to check online, I think it would be about almost 5 years ago, the one that Jeff Atwood helped me with.
Right.
And it's fine. Like, this is the thing about processor power and why gigahertz just matters less. I think that when I built this machine, it was about the last time that I thought about gigahertz. Because that was, yep. I spent 15, 20 years always thinking about that. It's a Core i7. It's an extreme edition. So it's the X980. Yep. It runs at 3.33. I overclocked it just a smidge. So it's a 12 processor machine. They call it a hexacore. It has 12 gigs of RAM and it's fine.
Like, yeah.
Really?
Well, it should be.
But it was fine 5 years ago. It's fine now. The two upgrades that I made to this machine were an SSD. If you're listening, you have to get an SSD. Oh, it is just folly to not have one.
Go to Amazon. Go to Newegg. You can get a 256 gig name brand, like a Samsung, mm-hmm. which is still considered one of the best ones, for under $200 now.
Yep.
So there is no excuse. If you use a computer for a living, please buy yourself an SSD yep. if your company won't.
So I did that, and then I found a Bitcoin miner online who was getting rid of NVIDIA cards, and I bought an NVIDIA 750i for $100, which gave me a significant, significant 3D upgrade, and I was suddenly now I can play 1080p games like Tomb Raider at 60 frames a second. And the only thing, like the only thing that keeps me up at night is just one day the SSD will die. That's basically it. Like, I'm 4 years into an SSD, and one day I'm going to turn this thing on, and it's just not going to turn on.
Yeah.
And that will be stressful, but everything's backed up.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
You know, basically the only thing that I worry about is hard drive failure.
Yeah. So the one thing that is eating at me a bit with my desktop at home now is just how much power it uses.
Just and like you're concerned about it from a global warming perspective?
Like, it's on most of the time. It's probably one of the major power draws because that i7 was rated at 140 watts of TDP. Like, it puts out a lot of heat, and it consumes a lot of power. So it's, you know, my office is a little noisy just because of that one tower. Mm-hmm. It has a very large cooler on it. Whereas if I drop one of the new Devil Canyons in, I can get, you know, a lot more processing power, but they're rated at 88 watts, and they run at 4 gigahertz. I mean, that's an incredibly fast CPU. It's the fastest non-hexa-core CPU you can buy, and yet it uses substantially less power and puts out a lot less heat than my current setup. And I could even get rid of the video card because it has integrated graphics, and I don't play PC games on my desktop at home. Mm-hmm. So I could, you know, really reduce the amount of noise and heat and power that my office consumes at home while still having it turned on all the time. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit torn at the moment about what to do with my desktop setup at home.
Okay, so let's in our closing here, as we've been rambling for a while, let's get down to brass tacks. Can someone take their existing machine, whatever their machine is, and replace it, if they are a full-time professional developer, with a Surface Pro 3 or a similarly spec'd machine?
So one thing that will stop you, it's a yes and no. If you ordinarily use virtual machines as part of your setup, then I would probably say no, because 8 gig of RAM is not enough to run a host and a VM. It just is not enough.
With any amount of performance?
With any amount of performance. I couldn't do it on my Carbon Touch, and I can't do it on my Surface Pro. If you don't use VMs, and I don't have any need to use VMs whatsoever, it is more than enough.
Okay. So I have a buddy of mine who bought a Surface Pro 3, and I warned him about that. And he has been running VMs, he says, with some success. Wow. What he does is he runs them off of a separate hard drive. So he gets a little more performance because you've got a USB 3 there. So he's got a USB 3 portable hard drive, 72 RPM. He runs the VM off of that. He says that he makes the VM a little smaller than you'd think because these are kind of single-tasked VMs.
I see.
The idea being that some people say, well, I have a 4-gig machine. I need a 4-gig VM. Really what you need is a gig and a half to run the one app or if you're doing, Windows, if you're doing website development, you just need IIS. So you keep it a little smaller. But the real kicker, and what I thought you were going to say, was that connected standby, that special, I'm asleep, but not quite asleep, I can still get email, power mode is disabled when you turn Hyper-V on. And everyone gets all torn up about that. But remember, that's a server-side feature that was ported to the client. So it makes sense that the most advanced client-side feature that Windows has is not supported by the most advanced server-side feature. So
sure, and let's remember that this is the first core product available in the market that supports connected standby. So what are you losing? I mean, my Carbon Touch didn't support connected standby.
Right. So connected standby, of course, is a way to snooze and then also wake up, do something real quick, and then fall back asleep. It also lets you be on standby for a very, very long period of time. What people are doing is just making a batch file that calls BCD edit and basically turning Hyper-V on and off. You can also make a boot menu if you want to do the same thing. So there's ways around it, but I agree with you. If you live and breathe VMs, then the Surface Pro 3 is definitely not for you.
Yeah, and I certainly hope that in the future, the CPUs do support 16 gigabyte, but there is no manufacturer building a laptop with an Ultrabook CPU that takes 16 gigabyte that I'm aware of. I would hope that someone allows that at some point in the future.
And this is where I think you and I totally agree. What does the ultimate developer laptop look like?
Yeah.
i7, go ahead.
For me, it's a Surface Pro 3. It's what I have right here. I could change anything. It would be to put 16 gigabytes in it and to have the next generation of CPU so that it puts out just a little bit less heat and I get a solid 7 hours of battery life out of it. That's the ultimate for me.
I would also say I very much, if you're going to use it for your main machine, I'm thrilled with the dock.
Yes.
I can run two large monitors, one off of the mini DV on the back of it, mini DVI on the back of it, and one off the side. So basically, in two monitors, you can chain using the display link chaining.
Yep.
You get like freaking 6 different USB.
On the dock,
On the dock. It's a ridiculous amount of USB, much more than most docks. It's really quite elegant. If my desktop died tomorrow, while I would mourn it, I would probably not rush out and replace it because I would probably just switch everything to use the Surface. So I'm pretty happy with that.
Awesome.
If you have an SSD and you've got 8 gigs or maybe 12, I think you could succeed. But I'm pretty happy with 8 and I'm going to keep using it.
Cool.
Thanks for chatting with me, buddy.
No, not at all.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.